This is Icon Art Radio. I'm Bill Teeple. I'm here with Alan Cobb, my co-host. And our guest today is Kim Matthews, whose show at MUM Unity Gallery opens on Tuesday, the 26th of February, 2013, in case you're listening to this as a repeat show somewhere in the future, or actually as you're listening, it won't be the future, it'll be now, and we're in the past.
It'll always be now.
That's right. For those of you who are not listening in the present, please contact us and let us know how you do that.
All right, we have Kim Matthews here from Minneapolis, who we've shown before at Icon Gallery in a group show. I think it might have been Gallery 51 East.
Gallery 51 East.
That was our original gallery up over, looking over the square, well, kind of over the square. And you've been in the back of my mind, and I always wondered what you were doing. And then I got the postcard for your show opening at MUM, and I loved the image on there. And you're doing stuff that's really right. I mean, I liked what you did before. It was sort of fiber pieces, is that right?
Yeah, I'm still doing fiber-based mixed media. Just
but it did you
taking a different direction.
Which was nice work, but these pieces that are wall pieces with patterning, repeated patterns of little shapes that make a, you're working both with pictorial illusory space and physical presence at the same time, and they're also, and rhythmic patterning and optical stuff. It's right up my alley. I love it. So I was really pleased to see what you were doing. And today I saw it, I saw the originals on the wall because I'd only seen online and on the postcard, which had gotten my interest, but then I saw the originals and they're dynamite.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for coming in and talking to us. We've never really sat to, this is the first time you and I have been together in the real person.
Yeah.
Person to person.
Yes, we've only had a
person
virtual.
Person to person. We've had that telephone virtual connection.
Yeah. And we call this FaceTime.
Yeah, that's right. In any case.
Meet time.
Now we can get to know each other, and the listening audience can know more about you. Also, I want to know a little bit about your history. Have you been making art since you were 5 years old, or did you get into it in college or high school? Tell me how it all unfolded for you.
I've always made art.
Okay.
And I went to college in the early 80s, and I was too young to be there and too scared and dropped out. And
were you studying art?
I was studying art at University of Maine in Orono.
Okay.
Because I grew up in Maine. And then I moved to Minneapolis, where my brother lives, and we later moved my mom out there. And I went to vocational school and became a graphic designer. And I've still work as a graphic designer. And then about 14 years ago, through a personal ad, actually, and dating, I learned, I learned how to meditate.
Oh, yeah.
And it was becoming a meditator that made me realize how much I really needed to get back involved in making art. And it gave me the courage to just do it. So I went to University of Minnesota, started doing printmaking there. From there, I found that I'm very much involved in the more tactile kinds of processes like relief printing and intaglio, and realized that available paper choices were not exciting to me. So from there, I took a papermaking course. Mm-hmm. And from there, started working dimensionally. And once I got into 3D, I went, okay, I'm home. Mm. This is it. And so, and that's about, and then I connected with you shortly thereafter, around 2003, I think.
Wow.
Something like that. So that's, I was doing dimensional paper.
That's 10 years ago.
I know.
I was thinking, this was a few years ago. No, time goes by.
Like
right? So, and you've continued to work consistently making art ever since.
Yeah.
Well, these pieces are really nice. Talk about the work you know, we love to talk about artwork on the radio because we can, you know, we can't see it.
Well,
so we have
about
to, you know, we
like
have to do the best we can to get people's interest to go down and actually see the show at the gallery, which is in the library of Marist University of Management here in Fairfield. So if you're listening to this streaming online down in Australia, get on the plane and fly up here and see this show.
It'll be totally worth it.
Yeah. You won't be disappointed. And I speak with confidence as someone who hasn't seen the show yet.
I was just glad that Bill picked me up at the gallery so he could get a peek, because what I was doing years ago is there. I mean, there's definitely some continuity, and yet I'm working much more reductively now, and have kind of set up a format that's based in squares and cubes. Mm. And so within that, as he mentioned, you know, a lot of repeated elements still lots of texture, though. Still very limited color and a lot of texture. But what I really have wanted to do and have moved towards in the past several years is trying to get people away from guessing what it is. Because they get so involved in, you know, is this a shell or is this a knot or is this a, you know. And what I'm really trying to do is get them to experience themselves.
I think the best question isn't what is it? It's what's it supposed to be?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. It looks sort of like a dog. Is it supposed to be a dog or is it a horse?
Yeah, that's right.
When
up
you get
there
better, I'll be able to tell right off the bat.
or that's different.
Yeah.
Or that's interesting. Ooh, kiss of death.
Now, what are the surfaces made out of? Because you've got repetitive little shapes, little bubbles with holes in it, about 1,000 of them, all lined up, and it creates wonderful patterning.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's...
What is that supposed to be? Is that a mud dauber's house? I'm kidding. No, they're beautiful. They're all these wonderful patterns. And so growing up in abstraction, I have no problem just seeing it that way.
I love patterns made of actual things.
But what, like the little, like bubbly-like things with holes in them, what is that made out of?
Literally, you mean?
Yeah. What is it supposed to be?
It's canvas.
Oh, because I saw some of them were obviously pieces of folded canvas.
All those big reliefs are canvas. It's just what the one that you are referring to is the one at the smallest scale that's made up of 1,678, I think, individual components, because that's what I do.
That sounds like a power of two.
It's, it's 44 inches by 44 inches, and the components are about a half inch by an inch. I make various templates and draw these shapes out on canvas and cut them out and assemble them. I started working that way because I have a full-time job. And, you know, when you work in things like handmade paper or printmaking or a lot of these other media, you really need hours and hours of time to work. And I don't have those. So I really wanted something that was very soothing and meditative and still very process oriented, because that's what I'm about. But that I could start and stop, so I can sit in front of the TV or whatever and trace out little shapes. So I can work in and have these very different levels of engagement, where sometimes it's just kind of mindless and I'm tracing stuff out. And then other times it's a much more focused kind of process. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty enjoyable. So where was I going with that? Material. Yeah. So just in your brief walkthrough, there's probably three different things going there. There are these individual shapes made many, many times and assembled. And then there's also a piece that's paper cord that's knotted onto plastic canvas, so it's just hundreds and hundreds of knots. And then there's a small piece you might not have noticed that's felt. I went to Haystack Mountain School of Crafts a couple summers ago and studied with Joan Livingstone from the School of the Art Institute of Chicago. Did a fiber workshop with her and learned how to make felt. So there's a felted piece there from that experiment. And then there's some cast paper. So there's a variety of stuff there, but it's all very tactile and fiber-based, although I just cringe when somebody calls me a fiber artist because my work isn't about medium, it's about content.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that's an important distinction.
Yeah, well, especially when you work in stuff that's rooted in craft, and especially when you're a woman, because women are constantly put in that...
Yeah.
You know, in ghettoized as a woman artist or ghettoized as a fiber artist or whatever. Yeah. And it's just, you know, my work is about consciousness.
It all stems from sewing.
Yes. Yeah. Well, you know, the thing is, it's true. There's a lot of, commonality but it's just not the focus of what I do.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's not particularly relevant.
Well, I'm going to look forward to when I take you back, taking a better look at how that piece, but I got the aesthetic impact without actually going more deeply into exactly how each piece was constructed.
How long is the show going to be there?
April 5th.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
So I'll have plenty of time to get over there.
We got in there this morning and I thought, oh my God, the space is so vast and these pieces that are so big in my house are just going to disappear.
Well, they look good.
And we put up that show, and I was just like, wow, this is just amazing. So there's 11 works total.
Cool.
And the space is pretty, it's pretty cohesive. It looks pretty good. So
it looks great. And there's space around things so you can see each piece without them competing.
It's really nice for things to have enough air.
They're obviously going to feel a little smaller than they do in your little house, probably. But they.
Yeah.
But that I thought the scale was very nice. I didn't know what scale they were exactly from the images I had seen.
Yeah.
So I was pleasantly surprised at the exact scale of each piece. Mm-hmm. I liked it.
Yeah, it came together really nicely too. The pieces range from I've got a small cast paper diptych in there that's like 8x16 or something to 44x44. And then there's a cube that I just finished. And that's about 26x26x26. So there's quite a range. And then the individual components are range from very small to pretty large. So I was really pleased too at how all that flowed from the small, the very small scale pieces still held their own against the bigger pieces.
Did.
So I think a lot of that has to do with just with working in monochrome and I do a lot of just stuff in white or gray, and then there's a couple of rusty pieces there, but it's all just real monochromatic.
Mm-hmm. Do you still do design work?
Yeah.
Is that your day job?
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
I work for a leftist propagandizer mail order company.
Great. So, yeah.
I make bumper stickers and t-shirts and stuff like that, swag.
Well, there's an interesting, you know, kind of continuum from design to fine art and a very broad, blurry area separating them. I mean, it's really, in many cases, it's very hard to decide whether... I mean, the stuff that I do, I like to do sound installations, which means building things that have speakers in them or behind them or something. But at the same time, I do design work with photography and with designer tools, and somewhere it starts sliding away from being design into being fine art, but it almost seems like the only thing that really makes the separation official is if there's no discernible purpose behind it.
Yeah.
You know,
that's what I think it was the. A friend told me this. I think it was the Smithsonian, you know, because they've got their fingers in everything. I think the Smithsonian said, "What distinguishes craft from art is that art is useless." Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's real arbitrary, but it's, you know, for purposes of museum curation or whatever, that I think it's as good... it's as good a tool to talk about stuff as anything, you know, and I wrestle with that particular issue quite a bit because my work is so labor intensive. And I think art recently has gotten so, anti-technical, that things that are more labor intensive tend to get pushed over to the craft area. I don't know if you've observed that or not, but.
Well, I think it relates to what you were saying earlier about, you know, fiber art versus something that's a work of art that uses fiber.
Yeah.
And it has, unfortunately, I think it has a lot to do with the materials. If somebody makes something out of knotty pine and it involves a great deal of carving and, you know, some cabinet work, it's going to be a variation on furniture or something until it gets really away from anything that could possibly be called furniture.
Right.
And even then, you know, there'll be a tendency to think of it as a thing that a craftsman made.
Right.
Because
right.
it's wood and it's fitted and it's, you know, finished.
But, you know, as far as I'm concerned, we've got fine art, totally useless, that's bad.
Yes.
Fine art totally that's very transcendent, and the same is true with craft. And if
right.
we can,
right.
you know, if it's transcendent, if it moves you deeply, if it takes you to a place of aesthetic perfection, then it doesn't matter what it is. It could be a plumber plumbing, and if way he does it could move us deeply, you know.
Right. Yeah, I was thinking about that too. I can't remember which segment I was listening to the other day, but it was a similar kind of discussion, and I was thinking, well, you know, I suppose you could argue that having some sort of spiritual or, you know, or psychological action is a function, you know. But,
well, sure, yeah, the social value of art
is
something.
I mean, you don't get me going, I'll spend the rest of the time talking. I've come to the conclusion, because at one time I felt like, oh, I have to be using my art for this, or I have to be doing more important things in art, saving the world in this way or that. Mm-hmm. And I thought that, I have to put aside that which I really want to do, which like makes some art, and just because it's, you know. And I have come to the conclusion in recent years that the absolutely most practical thing in the world is art, the useless kind, because its actual use is that it transforms the viewer. It restructures the consciousness of the viewer and takes him from disorder to a more ordered state. And that's about the most practical thing that
And that's what's so wonderful about the Smithsonian definition, is that the very use of the word useless draws attention to the fact that, well, really, is art useless? And you immediately have to deal with the fact that, well, of course, it's not useless. It's just the uses are all abstract. And the uses of an automobile are mostly, you know, concrete.
Right.
But they still have some abstract values as well. Of course, they say who you are and how much you're worth and how cool you are and that kind of stuff. But there really is a broad spectrum of usefulness for art. It's just harder and harder to describe what it is.
I think there's, you know, as somebody who's very involved in design and, you know, as a passion design, I think that there's a lot to be said for kind of drawing that line, though, because if I want a chair, you know, I love modernist furniture, and, you know, do I want a tulip chair or not? It looks cool, But does it hold me? Do my feet touch the floor? Is it comfortable to sit in? Can I get out of it?
Yeah.
You know, or so to me, that definition is useful insofar as, okay, design objects need to work. Their priority is to work.
Yeah.
And if they're aesthetically pleasing, hurrah.
Yeah.
And they should be, because they should be functional for the body and for the soul. Whereas art, you know, art is for the soul.
And yet at the same time, there's an incredible dimension of refinement in form following function.
You know,
in the aesthetic of a piece of mechanical engineering that was just, you know, there's a lot of different ways to design a mechanical thing that's totally functional. I mean, it's 99.999% just for function. And yet a French engineer will do it one way, an Italian engineer will do it another way, a Japanese engineer will do it another way, an American will do it another way. And when you start to look at those kinds of machines and look at the differences between the individual designers in their choice of whether to use the standardized parts or not, whether to, you know, make some custom fitting or redesign the whole thing so that you don't need custom fitting, so that it's more mass producible or whatever, it starts to get really fascinating. And it gets to the point where you start admiring things that are totally for function. And there was never a hint of aesthetics, supposedly, but you start admiring them for their aesthetic.
Yeah, because if they
the
really...
The form is following the function with elegance and perfection and, you know, refinement.
And if you separate the two, I mean, the best design has to do with someone completely embracing the boundaries that he has to work within of functionality.
Yeah.
And then makes it a perfect thing. And then the aesthetics get in that perfection.
Yeah.
But if an artist is like decorating something that has a function, where we've dichotomized the two, then it's
put a
really,
bird on it.
That's right. More swirls.
It feels just like that.
Needs more swirls.
More cowbell.
And I admire design so much.
Yeah.
And the best designers are the ones that take the problem and solve it.
Yeah.
An artist in his studio just coming up with an image from his own depths of his soul and some kind of a vision, that's one thing. But to have to take your skills and solve a problem of design, I admire it so much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And of course, at the other end of the spectrum, you have the artist who is stuck with stretchers of a certain size, or they have to start doing a little carpentry if they're painting and they want a canvas that isn't in the store, or they can't afford the ones in the store, or drop back a century or two and start finding your pigments and finding someone to grind them for you if you can, if you have a patron. And there's a whole lot of engineering involved in what you do. I mean, you've got to decide on these components that you're using as elements, and you've got to fabricate them.
Right.
And you're willing to, and you take pleasure in the sort of mindlessness of some of it. If I'm interpreting you correctly,
that's what's great about it. There's something very soothing in doing repetitive tasks.
Yeah.
And then there are other parts that are deeply engaging where there's a lot of decision making. So so that's enjoyable to have kind of both sides of that way of working.
Yeah. And I mean, to me, those are aspects of engineering too. You know, it's kind of like the piece of fine art is 99.9% non-functional and non-engineering, but there's still 1.1% engineering involved and at least 0.1% of functionality involved, if not a huge dollop of spiritual and philosophical functionality, cultural, social.
Well, the one in the design, it's form is following function, but as the artist, the function follows the form. That is the form that you visualize in your head. Then you got to figure out, how am I going to bring this into some kind of material form?
And the function itself may actually be in your mind as a statement of something, But it's something that you don't just write down in 10 words and put it on a poster. It's something that might take, you know, a month to build, and 1 out of 100 people who look at it may see that. But you're still saying something, and that, in a sense, is the function that you're trying to embody.
Right.
Now, in your artist statement, it's in the back of my head, I can't pull it all up, but you do talk about this interpenetration of the spiritual and the material
yeah.
as being part of what you're doing with your
Absolutely.
Work. You kind of say a word or two about what that was that I saw in the artist
yeah.
statement.
Yeah, and I'm still really trying to sort that out. But and it's kind of, its basis is in what I learned about Ayurveda's thoughts on food preparation, that the consciousness, it's very important when you cook dinner to be in a good mood, mm-hmm. because that, whatever that's your state of mind is, gets put into those foodstuffs, and then you are going to digest it, and your guests are going to digest it. So I think about that in terms of where I'm at when I'm making my work also, that I'm, you know, without overthinking things, because that's dangerous, but when I work, it's very important to me to just be fully immersed in that process and really mm-hmm. present, and put that sort of same kind of quality that one has of meditation really embed that into those works.
Well,
so
that's there. You can see, feel it. I mean, those material forms are creating spiritual space. They're very lively that way. The interpenetration of the two things is very much part of your work, and I really appreciate
you
that.
You have made my life. Thank you. I'm so
okay.
glad to
well,
be
let me just
Fairfield.
Say, before we run out of time, we've been interviewing Kim Matthews of Minneapolis, who is showing at the MUM Unity Gallery in Fairfield and opening on Tuesday, February 26, 2013. And it'll be up until when?
April 5th.
April 5th. Okay. Well, thanks so much for talking to us for a few minutes. This has been
Thank
great.
Thank you. That went fast.
Yeah, it sure did. I was thinking, we must have at least oops.
Wow.
You've been listening to Icon Art Radio, a production of Iowa Contemporary Art, Fairfield.